You're listening to a 3CR podcast recorded in the 3CR Community Radio Studio in Melbourne, Australia. If you like what you hear, please consider donating or subscribing so we can keep bringing you more independent community content. For more information, go to 3cr.org.au.
The 3CR Gardening Show is coming to you today from the Woi Wurrung Nation. We acknowledge the Wurundjeri people as the traditional owners of this land. We recognise the practices of care and cultivation of the land and waters by the First Peoples and pay our respects to their elders past and present. Wherever you are and wherever you garden, we encourage you to know whose land you're on.
Good morning to all the gardening folks, flower fanciers and plant lovers. You have tuned into the 3CR Gardening Show. Happy Sunday to those of you who tune in live, and a big hello to those of you getting your gardening show goodness via the podcast. My name is Chloe Thompson and I am your host for this morning's session. And in the studio with me today, we have the fabulous Adrian Keane.
Good morning.
Good morning to you too. You've got a pile of beautiful plants that we're going to chat to later on.
I have some rare treats.
Love it. For those of you who don't know Adrian, he is a former landscape architect and now an arborist with a passion for conservation and gardening. You can find Adrian over on @bush_magic on Instagram.
Yeah.
And the other person in the studio with me today is the incredible Cass Dowding, a.k.a. the Sentimental Gardener.
Hello, good morning.
So Cass is a podcast host of the Sentimental Gardener podcast, and you're also a writer for the Organic Gardener magazine, which I happen to also be the editor
of. Yes, you're my boss.
Well, you have submitted your article, so you're fine.
Yeah. Thank you. Still waiting for feedback, though, so I will behave today.
Nah, all good.
Thanks for having me, Chloe.
No worries, Cass. Always a joy to have you on. And it was funny, I had you in my, I was going to say in my ears, but that doesn't sound right. I was listening to your episode with Tim Pilgrim on the way in.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That would be really weird.
So I've had you like going since, what, I don't know, what is it, like 6:45 when I jumped in the car.
Nice.
Yeah. So I realised I hadn't listened to that one. I sort of listened to all the other ones around it. So I was like, right, hang on a minute.
Go back. Yeah. That came out last month, didn't it?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. That sounds about right. So it was a good one to listen to. So today in the studio, we're going to go down a little bit of a theme because we realise we all have a bit of a history with rental gardening, which then sort of connects to pots, which also then connects to what Adrian was saying about some of his plants. He's got some beginner-friendly ones, and then he's got some for those of us who fancy ourselves a bit more of an expert.
Those that want a challenge.
Exactly. and perhaps we'll also chat a little bit about budget gardening. I also, look, as an editor of a magazine, I get sent in a lot of gardening books.
Oh, nice.
And I thought, you know what? I get to flick through them. Some of them I get to read cover to cover for the magazine. Mm. But I thought, you know what? I'm going to bring a few in and chat to them as well. So I've got a pile of pretty new gardening books. I think even this one at the top here isn't actually out yet. So I quite often get to see books before they even hit the shelves.
Cool.
I thought, no, let's talk to those as
well. Yeah, definitely.
and obviously we'll open it up for questions to you guys as well. We've had someone say, good morning, coming in loud and clear here in Mount Eliza. Oh, thank goodness for that.
Excellent. That was just us. We just got a little treat.
We just had a weird little gremlin. And you know what? I find that, you know, we're all volunteers. You know, we're coming into a studio that's been used by other people throughout the week and pretty much every day. And there's often a little gremlin happening in. Apparently the other week there was missing a set of headphones.
Oh, that's nice.
So that would have been unusual, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
You wouldn't have been able to hear any of the callers. the joys. Well, you know what? We actually have a question here on screen to really kick things off. We've got a question from Bronnie in Box Hill North. She, say, hi, guys. We have a whole backyard with fresh garden plants, wanting to know the best program to use to plan the planting. So, Bronnie, I think what you're saying is that you've got fresh garden beds ready to go.
Yep.
But how do you go about planning the plants and where to put the plants in said garden bed? And we did have a quick chat before we actually turned the mics on. And pretty much we came to the same consensus, didn't
hand
we?
Hand drawing.
Yeah.
Get yourself some nice Derwents. Take your time. Measure the garden by hand. Go from there.
Yeah.
When I was studying landscape architecture, that was a big part of the process of producing a plan, was this notion of embedded knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
So the more you engage with what you're doing, the more you understand it. And then the final plan has the embedded knowledge in it that contains, you know, the process of doing.
Yeah.
Whereas if you download software, you might miss a bit of that embedded knowledge.
That's such a good idea. And I find so many of the softwares or programs out there that Bronnie's asked about, they're designed for professionals to use. So the amount of hours that you'd put into trying to learn how to do it.
Also
so
the cost and the restrictions on use. And like I used to use Vectorworks, which is fantastic, but it's cost prohibitive. And to learn how to use it, you'd be spending months. Go to the Derwents.
Yeah. So some pencils, sketch out the garden bed. And, you know, blobs, coloured blobs representing different plants. I'm also a big fan of, if it is a completely fresh garden bed and you are, like, buying the plants all at once, I'm a big fan of the pots. You lay the pots out, you lay the plants out.
Definitely, yeah.
And I will quite often, if I'm planting out a new area, I'll buy all the plants in and then I'll lay the plants out. And then I'll spend the next week walking past said plants laid out going, no, I don't think that does work there.
Yeah. It's interesting because that's what I used to do when I would lay out a planting site. So I'd have my beautifully prepared plan at scale. Like, that's going to work exactly right. And then I'd often have 5 or 10 plants left over that didn't fit. Or I'd be a little bit short and I'd be like, oh, okay, let's just have a little shuffle. Because things change slightly when you're actually in the physical space of a site.
Yeah.
So, yeah, getting all your plants in bulk and then doing the walk around, let it sit, have a think, come back.
Yeah. So true.
Yeah.
And I learned a neat trick off Jack Semler, actually. So if she's doing that where she's planting out a lot of plants and say she doesn't have a particular plant or she's missing something, she gets a stake and on the stake she paints it a certain colour. So say, and then, you know, she knows that any of the orange stakes represent plant X that she hasn't got yet. Or, you know, obviously if it's only one or two plants, you don't need to colour them. But, I saw her planting out a garden and it was full of, you know, yellow and orange and red little painted stakes. I'm like, what are they?
And she has such an amazing eye for colour as well.
Yeah. I've seen, speaking of like program and drawing, she does have a segment on Gardening Australia or a couple of, maybe it's a series.
Yeah, she did a little mini series.
Yeah, where she talks about how to draw your garden plan and plan out the colour schemes. Now, it's been a while since I've seen it, but, yeah, that is available online if you need ideas. And she doesn't always draw from, you know, like top down. Sometimes she'll draw from, like, what it would look like across a fence.
A little
different perspective.
An elevation view they get sometimes, don't they?
So that's a good way if you just can't think about how to do it without seeing someone do it first. That's a great little tip.
Oh, there we go. I hope that's really helped you, Bronnie. There's a brain dump of ideas there. Maybe if any of our listeners have any other little nifty tips or tricks, you could send us an SMS or give us a call in. Now, for those of you who are just waking up or perhaps those of you just tuning in and turning on your radio, you're listening to the 3CR Gardening Show. My name's Chloe Thompson and in the studio with me today are Cass Dowding and Adrian Keane. Let's have a bit of a chat about what's happening in your garden at the moment at home. Who wants to go first? Cass, you can go first.
Oh, I'll be the quickest because I haven't been outside much lately, but... I will. Last time I was on was probably about 6-8 weeks ago with you, Chloe, and I talked about my sunflowers. And I've come back to update everyone on the growth of the sunflowers. Now,
we have a spectacular sunflower in front of us.
Yeah, well, this is the little one, and look, it's lost a few leaves, but it was an experiment I did at the end of February. And they're not meant to really last this long. Most people plant them for summer blooming. And these were seeds that I literally found out and I felt bad that I hadn't planted them for summer, threw them all in this new garden bed and they all sprung up and every one of them flowered and they've just finishing flowering.
Brilliant.
And I think it was, you know, we had that extended warm autumn.
Yeah, it was like a little mini spring thrown into the mix. It was very strange.
Yes. So it was when I came in last, they were all just starting to maybe pop some little heads on them. they all bloomed, and they're like giant Russians. And yeah, I'll have to take a photo in front of them because they're like over 3-4 meters tall. Yeah, so that was really exciting that they're at the top of the driveway, they're in a raised bed, and then, you know, it's this, the weather's turning, it's getting quite, you know, darker earlier, and then we have these beautiful sunflowers still.
Love it.
That are, yeah, bringing a bit of brightness and cheeriness.
That's fantastic.
Mm,
so good.
Very exciting.
I do love that aspect of gardening, thinking to yourself, you know, well, the packet says this, but I'm going to break the rules a little.
Yeah. I'm going to actually do this and we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
And then you have a win, and then every now and then you have a crushing failure.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Oh, well, but then it's really good. And for people like me who, you know, we're still at the start of our, well, you know, learning as we go, I suppose we're all learning as we go.
Mm.
And we've heard from people things like you plant your tomatoes on cup day and all those type of law of garden timing.
Mm.
With changing climate, we do have to learn to adjust sometimes those ideas. So this is a really cool experiment that I found to go, well, what happens if I just push that a little bit?
Mm.
Is it going to work? Is it not going to work? And so, yeah, keeps it interesting.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. That is very, very true. Maybe that can actually be something we also ask our listeners to SMS or call in, you know, what are their boundary pushing gardening, you know, outside the rules, and I'm doing air quotes when I say that, things that they've succeeded with or failed with as well.
Or failed, yeah.
I mean, that's how we learn, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes. Gardening failures.
Mm-hmm.
I call them experiments.
Yeah.
They're not failures. They're
experiments. No, because you always learn something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
My touch and go is an Australian native turmeric.
Oh, okay.
So it's from Cape York, and it'll grow in Melbourne, and it will even flower in Melbourne.
Yeah.
But the touch and go part of it is what to do with it over winter.
Ah.
So the tubers keep rotting, and I keep forgetting to lift my tubers, put them in some paper towel, keep them somewhere nice and dry. And so then each year it's getting a little bit smaller, and then some years it'll get a lot bigger, and it's like, oh, God, please don't die.
Is it? It's in a pot?
Yeah, it's in a pot.
Yep.
Yep. It's in a pot. It's, I looked at it this year and I was like, definitely needed to dig you up over winter because you're about half as big.
Okay.
But the year before it flowered, so, yeah.
I wonder if you could put like a cloche over it or a little mini glass house.
I just need to do something. Yeah. I just keep looking at it and like, you're fine. And then I get to August and it's like, it's already done.
My husband calls me a plant torturer when I do that type of thing.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, but it looks, I'm like, it's fine, leave it alone.
Yeah.
He's, or, you know, oh my God, what did you do to it? Oh, it was annoying me.
Yeah. My garden's getting to that stage as well because pretty much all the beds have enough plants in them. So you'll get like your little treats at a nursery.
Yep.
But then if they're not quite exciting enough, they'll just sit in the pot a little too long and you're like, I'll clear you out eventually.
Yep.
Or then the eucalypt I brought in, I was like, no, that's going in a railway station or something. There's no space.
There's no space.
Oh. It's a little too optimistic of you.
Yeah, I was like, oh, I shouldn't have bought that gum tree. Yeah.
I'm glad it's not just me.
No, definitely. I think that's horticulturalist plant people wide. You go to a nursery and there's always a little tempter.
I know.
I was at Baleen the other day and they had red and green kangaroo paws, the type species, and I was like, oh, just a couple. And then I was like, nah, they don't grow at my house.
Mm.
There's no way to put them. Don't do it.
Oh, so much restraint. Good on you.
I know.
Oh, it's a budget thing. We're going to Indonesia. So
fair enough.
Like, I need to be good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's very good.
No.
Good to have a limit there. And what about in your own garden then? What's happening?
Well, we're at planting capacity, so it's just letting things grow, which is very new to me because this is my first actual home garden.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been in rentals my whole life.
Yep.
Well, not my whole life, like whole adult life in Melbourne. So that's like 18 years. And, yes, having a home garden where you can plant stuff and then watch things grow is a very foreign concept. And it's like, oh, I don't have to, oh, okay, I get to sit back and watch. So the main thing at the moment is just weeding and a little bit of formative pruning.
Mm.
So kind of at that nice wait and see stage. And then we'll see what comes up in spring. Any failures we'll remove. Any successes we'll take note of that and go from there. Yeah.
Oh, fantastic.
So it's an exciting little phase at the moment with my place.
Yeah. Mm. Are you planning on exploring gardens in Indonesia as well?
I did that the last time I was there. I went to the Botanic Gardens in Bali, which was really interesting because it's right at the top of the volcano.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a completely different microclimate and there's some remnant vegetation. And the highlight for me was the orchid collection because, like, you know, Indonesia's tiny little islands everywhere, lots of endemic orchids. And that was mind-blowing. And it was kind of sad. They had to have them in these caged-off enclosures that were only accessible at certain times when there was a guard there.
Oh,
because people
wow.
steal them constantly. Oh. It's such a huge problem.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
So that was a bit like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Caged plants.
Yeah, caged plants.
Caged orchids.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm. But no, it'll be a classic Bali holiday.
Nice. Yeah.
There'll be bintangs, there'll be pool, there'll be nice meals.
Lovely.
Yeah, there'll be a bit of snorkeling if I'm feeling adventurous. That'll be about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll stick some photos up on Instagram and make us jealous about the warmth.
Yeah. Definitely.
Look, everybody, sunshine and tropical plants. As we're shivering in our beanies. Oh, dear. Speaking about climate, Kat from the Macedon Ranges has texted in. Good morning, everyone. I have tomatoes popping up in my garden at the moment in the Macedon Ranges. Very odd. I'm sure they won't thrive or fruit, but still very odd and out of season.
Mm.
Yeah, that is pretty
bizarre.
That's
really weird.
I reckon I pulled out a few little tiny seedlings probably about a month ago. And, yeah, the same thing. Like, they obviously came out of my compost.
Yep.
That I'd spread around the garden beds, but
yeah
weird, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a bit unnerving, isn't it?
Yeah.
I have some.
You
little
do?
Seedlings, yeah. Yep, and they're in a pot, and they've let the fruit drop, and then they've self-seeded, and I'm looking at them going, oh. And part of my brain goes, maybe I could nurse them over winter. And
then
I'm like,
go.
Yeah. The dedication is just not my strong point.
A lot of effort, then you might get like one half-formed tomato from spring.
I've got the seed saved, so I'll just have to just put them into the compost and like, good effort.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll start again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. I know, you do feel a bit mean, don't you? Mm. Sort of like, oh, guys.
Yeah.
You know, if you just stayed down for a bit longer, you could have been useful. But that is interesting, isn't it, Kat? Yeah, the things are a little bit wonky at the moment and all over the joint. For those of you who would like to shoot us a text message or give us a call on the phone line, we would love to hear from you. You can talk to us on air if you'd like to call on 94190155, or you can send us a text message on 0488 809 855. You can also send us an email. However, we can't really read them out or see photos on air, while we're on air rather. But if you do want to send us an email question and the crew who comes in next Sunday can answer it, your best place to email us is 3cr.gardening@gmail.com. And just as an added incentive to call us in and have a chat to us on air, if you would like to, I do have 3 copies of the current Organic Gardener magazine to give away. And that's issue 165, which is our early winter issue. And it's loaded with really useful stuff for this time of year, wherever in Australia you might have your garden. So on the cover is a gorgeous bunch of rainbow chard.
Mm, isn't tasty.
Isn't it just the most beautiful veg?
Mm, it is.
It really looks like it's, you know, it's sitting there ready to show off.
Mm.
I've got on the cover, we've got reds, whites, pinks. I've got bright yellow and orange in my garden.
Yellow.
Isn't it fun? Yeah. I love the way it holds its colour as well. So if you would like a copy of that, I've got 3 copies to post out to the first 3 people who are brave enough to call in and have a chat to us on air. I think it's a nice reward for calling in, don't you?
Yeah, definitely.
I feel like we've got to do that. Actually, while people are dreaming up their questions, I've got to do a little shameless plug, because we got the results of, there's a thing called Roy Morgan readership.
Oh, yes.
Which is how magazines measure their readership.
Mm.
And I think they send it out every couple of months. And we have just found out that our readership over the last 12 months has gone up 31%.
Congratulations.
Wow.
Isn't that exciting?
That's really exciting.
Yeah.
So I was a little bit blown away. And, I mean, I've pretty much been the editor for nearly 12 months.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Put that in the CV.
Oh,
yeah.
That's kind of cool.
That's great. But you do a lot of work in intentionally creating themes, and you put a lot of effort into you create beautiful briefs too as the writer.
Oh, thank you.
So it's not just like, what are we going to put in this month? That's what I love as someone who helps contribute, is just the amount of thought that you put into what is going to be helpful for people.
Yep.
That's what I love about it. Mm. Yeah.
Oh,
it's not just
Cass.
Yeah. beautiful. It's beautiful pictures, but it's so such a great resource to learn.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Mm. That's good to know. Yeah, and that's the type of feedback we're getting from, you know, readers all around. It was so nice to meet so many readers at MIFCUS.
Oh, yeah. Mm.
And that was really lovely hearing from them, and they were coming from all different states. And
cool.
Yeah, I thought that was really fun. Mm. So I can see the phone lines are lighting up, which is very exciting. Hello, everybody. Now, let's see if we can get some people on. So I'm not sure if – oh, no. I might just wait for the producers to fill the data in because it's not coming through just yet. I can see some text messages though, so let's get to those while the producers work their magic through the line of calls. Can a smoke bush be grown in Melbourne?
Depends on what you mean by smoke bush. Do you mean a
conatus?
Conatus? That definitely.
One. Yes, 100%.
Do you mean a Canary Island smoke bush? Definitely. Yeah. Or do you mean the Australian smoke bushes, which are, oh God. I think it's Conospermum. I could be wrong. They're in the Proteaceae family, and they can be grown in Melbourne. They are very rare in cultivation, and like a lot of semi-arid dry sclerophyll plants, they need excellent drainage, great airflow, full sun.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the Conatus smoke bush, yes, 100%. I've got one at my place. My parents have one at their place.
Yes.
I've got them in pots.
Ah, there you go.
Yeah.
How's that going? Because they're so vigorous.
Yeah, it's really good.
They tolerate pruning well, they too. Do. So I imagine you could pull that bad boy out, just treat it like a bonsai, give it a little snip snip.
There you go. In. Yeah, I haven't got to that stage. It's only 2 years old. It was probably about 30 centimetres high when I brought it, bought it.
Mm.
And I was told not to prune it for a few years to let it get a little bit more established before I chop it back.
Makes sense.
Mm. So it did flower this year though, second Ooh, year.
So pretty.
Yeah, so it's in a 50 centimetre pot.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yep.
Sizable pot.
Yeah.
Nice.
That is a good size pot.
I think it came in at probably a 20 and I just went, oh, well.
Next size up. Yeah.
It's well, so vigorous. I'm sure it would have been fine.
Yeah.
It's that was one of my notes. If you got a really, like once you get a, like your general rule of thumb with stuff in pots, just go one size up. Once you get the hang of that, then you can start to experiment. Really vigorous plants, you can go a few sizes up.
Push it a little bit more.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. That's exciting.
Yeah. Mm. And you're so right. They do take pruning really well.
Mm. Yeah. We had one at home and my dad would like hack it back to stubs.
Yeah.
Pollarding, essentially. Yeah. And then you'd get like 2 metres of growth every year.
Yeah.
So cool.
Yeah. So cool.
And the autumn foliage on those is just spectacular.
That's why I love it. And it's called Grace. How do you say it? I thought it was cotinus, but I'm saying it wrong. Is it cotinus?
I've always said cotinus. Cotinus.
There you go. Cotinus Grace.
I picked up cotinus, but it's Latin. It's a dead language.
Yeah, I know.
So I know.
Throw it out there with confidence and people are like, yeah, it's
There are dwarf versions as well, which I looked at, but I went with the namesake because I'm the sentimental gardener. So there you go.
Oh, I love that. There we go. I hope that was helpful. We have a Tasmanian chocolate tomato, and it's still alive, says Peter and Vicky from Notting Hill. It's alive and fruiting in a pot that was planted in November 23.
Mm.
Whoa.
That's cool.
Wow.
That is very cool.
That's I wonder where they've got it planted.
Yeah, you've obviously got it, you know, especially being in a pot, you can move it around and chase the warmth and the sun and obviously keep it alive. I'd love to know if you're doing sort of a serious cutback and almost pollarding your tomato and letting it come back to life as well. Yeah, maybe shoot us some more info there, Peter and Vicky. That's fascinating. Mm. Yeah, isn't that wild? It looks like the producers are still on the phone lines. So if anyone has come through with a question, guys, make sure you let us know on the screen and then we can have a chat with them, which is exciting. We were just going to talk a bit about rental gardeners because it was something that we realised, Cass, you're currently in a rental.
Mm-hmm.
Adrian, you have been in rentals and obviously I have been in rentals as well. And it also came about because on Tuesday this week I did a talk at a library in Moonee Ponds to about 60 or 70 people that were there. And it was on balcony gardening, courtyard gardening, and, you know, more than 50% of the audience was rental gardeners as well. So I was like, well, let's continue the theme this morning.
Yeah, perfect.
And dive into that world. And I mean, you know, even if you're not a renter and you are listening, there's still so many tips and tricks you can take away from a rental gardener chit chat.
Oh, 100%.
So, I mean, maybe let's start with Cass, if you wanted to give us some of your maybe biggest challenges as a rental gardener, what are some of the things that you probably struggle the most with being a rental gardener?
So the garden I'm in came with an established garden full of plants that I don't love. So there's that, which is interesting. But the first thing is, like, we have a really good relationship with our landlord.
Okay.
And we have been there over 10 years now, which is not common in rentals. Yeah,
yeah, that's a great relationship.
She has said that I can change the garden as if it was my own, which is lovely.
That's good.
And
that's
a lot fantastic. Of the original garden had a lot of succulents in it. So, which, you know, they just keep multiplying and growing. So I did give a lot of those away, but I've kept them because, you know, you can obviously strategically place them around and move them. And then if you kill them, you can just, you know, regrow from them. So that was a challenge with, you know, we've got a lot of box hedges and roses and things. So what, that very traditional 2000s. Yeah. So learning
it's
to look.
Paul Bengay.
Yeah. It's really interesting. A lot of conifers and So creatively that was like, right, well, how can I create a garden that feels like me or us? And that has been like a really good challenge. So I've introduced a lot of perennials because I've been looking at a lot of gardens that have perennials. And, it's sort of creating, you know, a cohesion. It fits with the, you know, the, it's in a residential area.
Yeah.
So it kind of fits. Does that make sense? It's not, I haven't ripped it out and created something different. And that is, I suppose, is part of the journey of renting, that you don't always get to create the space that you want, but you can do something with, while you're there. So, yeah. And there's, I've done my best with the soil. It was all that compacted clay from where they've, you know, squashed down the ground. And so I've, you know, spent a lot of work learning how to compost, putting my own compost in, just keep adding organic material. And I've seen, you know, the garden quite rejuvenated because of that. So, yeah. So that's a huge challenge in learning to look after what you've got, even though you don't love it.
Yeah.
And then the other thing, a huge thing was, well, I wanted to grow edibles. Where do I grow them? So it was the backyard. I did try in a few different pots, but then we bought a big trampoline, which took up the whole backyard. So, but I found a space and I created some raised beds. So that was really good. And I've over time changed what the raised beds are made of. So originally they were polystyrene boxes, which is how I started. And that was a great way to learn all those basic skills of growing in like a container. And then I had some wooden boxes, which eventually rotted over time. And now I've got some more of that, the metal boxes. So, yeah, learning to look after things in raised beds to grow the edibles. And then also the beautiful things with those raised beds is they're movable.
Yes.
So that wasn't, you know, wasn't the right spot. There was a lot more shade than I realized. And having time at a place, you get to learn over the seasons where the sun is and where it's really deep shade in winter. So, yeah, they've been some of the initial challenges.
That's amazing.
Mm.
I've definitely experienced that problem of being in a rental garden and having a garden full of things that, you don't particularly want. One of the share houses that I lived in Richmond had standard roses all across the back. Adrian's laughing. And, I did not want them there. I wanted everything else other than them.
Yeah.
I wasn't allowed to take them out because, as the landlord said, they were like $40, $50 each.
Yeah.
So I got away and underplanted them with herbs.
Yeah.
Low-growing herbs. I underplanted them with herbs and then just diverted to growing everything else in pots.
Yeah. That's the route I took.
Yeah.
That or I just threw caution to the wind.
Yeah.
There's a lot of eucalypts planted in various rentals that I shouldn't have.
Oh.
Oh, no. God. But, you know, like growing in pots, it's something that even non-renters actually do a lot of. I mean, I have a quarter-acre block and it's it's a space where I've got lots of little microclimates.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And lots of raised beds and lots of terracing because of the slope I'm on. But there's also sections where if I didn't grow in pots, I wouldn't be able to grow at all.
Yeah. Okay.
And that's because I've got paved spaces or like the edge between some stairs and my driveway. So, you know, using pots in those spaces means that I can grow stuff. So I think most gardeners, even if you're not a renter, you can still use pots really successfully and effectively to just grow in spaces that might not necessarily be...
Getting a nice mastery of how to grow things in pots really does open up a range of things for you. Like from a native plant perspective, like the world of alpine plants and orchids and hard-to-grow dry sclerophyll plants, that starts to open up to you once you get the fundamentals right with growing things in pots.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of those things you just wouldn't bother putting them in the ground because they'll just get swamped and disappear.
Yeah.
Like, the, you know, orchids, the only place I've seen them grown in a garden is the botanic gardens. And they do it amazingly, but, like, the time and resources, that's probably beyond the average gardener.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, good for pushing the boundaries.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, here we go. We've heard back from Peter and Vicky about their Tasmanian tomato. So regarding the Tasmanian chocolate tomato, we have it under a pergola at the moment where the rain and wind doesn't get it, but it can also get the sun. It has been trimmed a few times here and there and occasionally gets a little feed and a top up of potting mix.
Wow. We're all in awe.
Yeah, I'm in shock. That's cool as.
Just topping up and wow.
That's crazy.
I'm so intrigued.
I know. Off to go and find myself some Tasmanian chocolate tomato seeds.
Yeah, sounds like a really compatible tomato for that area.
Yeah, and I mean, Notting Hill's inner east, mid-east suburb?
Yeah, south, sort of southeast.
Is it southeast? Yeah. So, you know. That's pretty cool. Well done, guys.
Yeah, congratulations.
Kudos. Yeah.
Gold star.
Totally in line with our discussion about pushing the boundaries as well, which I think is particularly cool.
Yeah.
So if you do have a question or you would like to call in, you are listening to the 3CR Gardening Show. My name is Chloe Thompson, and in the studio with me today are Cass Dowding and Adrian Keane. You can talk to us live on air if you are brave. We would love to hear from you. You can call us on 94190155. And if you do call in and chat with us on air, I do have one copy of the Organic Gardener magazine to give away left. Or you can send us a text message on 0488 809 855. We'd love to hear from you to join in the chat. Adrian, what about you? Like, what would you say to renter gardeners?
I actually did an extensive notes app.
Oh, love it.
So I'll just have a quick little look.
Quick little look through your notes.
Just a little refresher.
Oh, so good.
I suppose the first thing that I really considered when I started growing in rentals was, what kind of microclimate do I have? Mm-hmm. What's my aspect? What's my airflow like? How much rainfall is actually realistically going to get to the plants?
Yeah.
Like, because most of the places that I lived were high density housing, so often there would be no accessibility to rainfall at all.
Yeah.
And that can have a huge impact on growing plants. So that was sort of my key consideration, and then reflecting on what the microclimate was like then dictated, well, then I'd start thinking about what kind of natural environments have any sort of parallel and going from there. So when I was in Westgarth, that was a garden that was on Gardening Australia. It had a blast of sun in the morning and then a blast of sun in the afternoon and it had no airflow. So I had to give up on dry sclerophyll plants while I was there. But it was really interesting because I could grow a whole bunch of rainforest plants and wet sclerophyll plants, which did brilliantly and looked amazing. But it was just, it was a process of learning, trial. Like, I love grevilleas, but that was a nightmare. They all got spider mite and died within a couple of weeks. But it was a little bit of trial error. But, yeah, once you understand your microclimate, that kind of sets the tone and then you can branch out from there and you figure things out as you go along. And it's just all about the deep dive. Like, jump on Google, have a little read, make observations when you go on bushwalks or walk around your local community and see what's growing as well. And don't be afraid to go to a specialist nursery and have a chat.
Yes.
Because they're there to help. they obviously want to give you plants that will grow well at your place.
Yeah. And, you know, your local garden centre, I know there's a new garden centre right near me, and it's actually owned by award-winning landscapers.
Yeah,
and perfect. When he first opened, he said, you know, no, I'm not doing plants. It's all just about the bulk materials, because that's what they use as landscapers, you know, your mulches, your gravels, your soils. And he goes, no, I'm not doing plants. And anyway, he got pestered by everyone. Put some plants in. And he's put some, you know, now got some plants in stock. And he goes, but I'm not going to have everything. He said, as a local landscaper, I'm going to bring in plants that I know that work in this area.
Perfect.
And I was like, perfect. That's what we want. You know, especially people who are either new to the area or haven't gardened in the area, they want to be able to walk in and go, I would like a shrub, I'd like some ground covers and some tufting grasses, please, that work in this area. Yep. And he can go, yeah, here you go.
Yeah.
These will grow.
Yeah, these will grow. I know, because I plant them in that garden.
No, for sure, because there's nothing more disheartening when you start gardening and then everything's a fail. It's
like,
what am I doing?
Yeah. And then who do you talk to? Who do you ask the questions of? So I love that there's a local place that you can go to. Because the internet is wonderful for getting information, but as you said, everywhere has its own little microclimate. And then so who do you go to ask? And if you've got somewhere local, that's such a great resource, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And your local garden club. Like even if you're a renter garden, go to your local garden club.
Actually, that's something I definitely would plug.
Yeah.
Go to like a growing friend sale or a, like, you know, like when they have the Yarra Valley Plant Fair or the Fernie Creek Horticultural Society or the Growing Friends at Cranbourne or the Growing Friends at Melbourne. Like, because they bring in a catchment of people from a vast area. It's not just necessarily just people from Fernie Creek. And you can get some really great insight and knowledge on what to grow.
We have a phone call from Fermie. Hello, are you there, Fermie?
Yes, hi, how are you?
We're good. You wanted to chat about alpine plants in pots.
Yes, I heard growing in containers and alpines mentioned by Adrian.
Yes, definitely.
And your ears went ting.
Well, we've got an event coming up at the with the Alpine Garden Society of Victoria. We've got a it's a plant show and plant sale.
Okay.
On the 17th of October.
Yep.
And there's going to be a planting demonstration of a trough.
Mm-hmm.
By Alan Ayton. Those
very
of you
exciting.
Went to Fernie Creek would have seen Alan's amazing range of alpines for sale. And he's one of the few people in Victoria selling Australian alpine plants.
It's funny you mention that. I'm actually looking at one of the plants that I bought from him from that plant sale.
And so what are the times on the 17th of October, Fermie?
Oh, good question. I think that it's something like it's not set yet.
Oh, okay.
I think we're looking at starting at about 11. As far as we're concerned, there won't be any food sales, so bring your own lunch.
Okay.
But, sales, I think, the plant sales and all will start fairly early.
Yep.
But the demo, I think, is going from 11 o'clock.
Okay. So, and what about tickets? Do people need to pre-book or do they buy at the gate or is it free?
It's free.
Ooh, free.
Yay.
And the address and or the location again?
Yes. Okay. So the address is the Olinda Community House.
Okay.
They put that in their search engines.
Yep.
They will find it.
Okay, perfect.
It's on the Olinda Road. It's right next door to the Olinda Pool.
Oh, yeah.
So hopefully it's not warm enough to have a whole lot of people using the pool.
I doubt it somehow.
It's wonderful having an outdoor pool on the top of a mountain. But anyway, it's good for us because parking lot's usually free most of the time.
Well, that's true. Okay. Well, that sounds fantastic. So trough planting of alpine plants, 17th of October at the Olinda Community House.
Yeah.
If people would like to learn more.
Yeah. So troughs, the AGS also do run trough-making workshops. And troughs, I do remember an episode on Gardening Australia from when from when Jane was a newbie.
Oh, my goodness.
Australia,
wow.
Where they made troughs by just making up a concrete mix and pouring it into a form.
Ah.
And that would have been incredibly heavy.
Yes. Yes.
So we make a trough up with equal parts of coir peat, perlite, and then cement.
Oh.
Not a concrete mix, but just the cement powder.
So it sort of becomes an aerated concrete.
It becomes a bit lighter than just plain concrete.
Right. Okay.
And there's various ways of making troughs. One, the standard way is to make a form. And, that's just like doing any concrete work. You can use plywood or we like using old polystyrene fruit boxes.
Yep.
Like that. And putting smaller bits of polystyrene in the center to make to give you a form that you can pour the concrete between the two layers of polystyrene.
Oh, that's clever.
Yeah. Now, there was a trend at one stage to add fiberglass.
Mm-hmm.
Little fibers of fiberglass were mixed in with it to give it added strength, which meant you could make the walls a bit thinner.
Ah, okay.
But usually you have to have the walls about 2 centimetres, nearly an inch thick.
Yes.
To give it some structural integrity.
Yep.
And look, they can be small enough to have a single cyclamen in,
mm-hmm.
or you could have them big enough to have a variety of plants in. And that's the sort of thing that Alan will be planting out on the 17th of October.
Fantastic.
Troughs have been a way of growing plants for a long time, and they're a great way where you don't have the exact climate or the exact conditions for certain plants.
Mm.
They're much better grown in troughs.
Yep.
And, of course, in this modern age, they're so portable so that if you are renting, you don't have to lose your garden when you change your lease. So,
yeah.
And alpines are perfect because they grow so compactly.
Mm-hmm.
And they can be used, for this purpose really well. So that's something we encourage the growing of. I would say just about every member of the AGS would probably have a trough or two around the place. And if you ever go to some of the gardeners like Viv Condon's garden, she has a troughery.
A troughery.
I love it.
A little collection of troughs.
Oh, that's fantastic. Oh, yeah. Well, thank you so much, Fermi. I'm glad you've been able to tell everyone about that. 17th of October, Alpine Garden Society at Alinda Community House. Thanks again, Fermi.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks. Bye for now.
Bye.
Ah, there we go. Handy tip.
How cool.
Yeah. I know. And you know what? Speaking of trough planting, I've always found that trough planting, so we're talking, typically rectangular, sort of, 30 to 40 centimetres.
Yep.
Obviously, as Fermi just said, they can be tiny little troughs for littler plants. But if you've ever a rental gardener and you don't have that space to, do a border garden, again, doing air quotes, trough planters can be a great way to, almost simulate a border garden. So you can get, the taller plants at the back, the fillers in the middle, and then the spillers down the front.
So good.
So, yeah, it can be a nifty little way to do that, can't it? Yes, very good. We've had a text come in. I'd love to know some examples of the eucalypts that Adrian has planted in his rental gardens and if he's ever visited to see how they're going.
So both of the rentals that I lived in and planted eucalypts have been demolished.
Oh.
So there's no trees there.
So the whole house has been demolished.
Not demolished. Renovated.
Renovated, yeah.
Yeah, there was a house in Brunswick West. It had a massive cider oxalin in the front yard, a red ironbark.
Yeah.
And then I planted a couple of mallee gums. I've forgotten what they were off the top of my head. They all got removed quite quickly. And then the other house was in Brunswick Central. And Oh, no, there wasn't any ukes in the front yard. There was a Myoporum floribundum, which is like a very fast-growing Myoporum that has its own little eccentricities. Mm-hmm. Gully grevillea and a few others, so rare Victorian endemic plants. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, they all got ripped out promptly. Mm. I did sneak a Colytris into the nature strip, which is a native cypress pine.
Yeah.
That lasted about 2 years. And then the neighbour that lived next door must have realised that I'd snuck in. Because she was constantly telling me off for planting stuff. Because she had the box hedge and iceberg roses.
Yeah.
So she was watching that nature strip like a hawk.
Oh, no.
And it disappeared overnight. But, I mean, we get that a lot at my work. Things disappear.
Okay.
Yeah.
Part of me thought that as an arborist, you were like guerrilla gardening ukes everywhere, so you can then sort of go, oh, by the way, if you need an arborist.
No. I have to be very careful of that because of my job.
Yeah.
Which, if I didn't do what I did, I probably would. Be a little bit more cheeky.
Be a bit more guerrilla gardening.
Yeah. I mean, it's not the end of the world.
No.
Yeah.
But what about, you know, trees in rental gardens?
Yeah. Now,
what even ukes in rental gardens?
I would be looking at any of the small ukes.
Mm-hmm.
So anything mallee is a really good way to start. And then treat it like a giant bonsai. Don't be afraid to have a go at a little root prune. And then balance your massive roots with your massive foliage.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of a really good way to go.
Yep.
Because if you do a repot and do an aggressive root prune and don't trim the canopy, you're going to set the tree back and it's going to need a lot of nurturing to get it back up to scratch.
Yep.
But, yeah, any of your mallee gums, even Southwest Australia, alpines, subalpines, there's some really interesting ones from Southeast New South Wales.
Yep.
Give those a go in a pot. They're very interesting. You can get a little bit of height.
Yeah.
So if you've got a courtyard or, you know, a small outdoor space, they're a good option to have a look at.
Yeah. And sort of 50-centimetre size pots, like half wine barrel type
half
size?
Half wine barrel, 50-centimetre, or you can get those from the big green shed. You can get the massive plastic pots.
Oh, yeah.
They work as well.
They do, yeah. Yep.
And they're surprisingly tough. Yeah. But you've got to not be afraid to jump in and have a little go at a bit of a root prune every now and then and a little go at a canopy reduction.
And can those mallees take that from a young age in pots? Or?
Best to let them, similar to the smoke bush, let them get established and then revisit after a couple of years.
Yeah.
Like I'm trialling growing Eucalyptus michellii, which is found only on Mount Buffalo, really rare eucalypt, bloody hard to grow.
Oh.
And so this time around I'm like, right, let's do a pot and see how we go, because it's not a big tree. Like in the wild it gets to 5 metres. And so that's the approach I'm taking with this one. So it's 6 months in, I'm going to repot 2 or 3 times, then I'll look at doing a root prune and see how we go. Yeah. But it's I would say that's sort of an intermediate entry level.
Yeah.
If you want a tree.
Yeah.
And then if you just want an easy beginner tree, look at some of the rainforest plants from dry rainforest areas. Eleocarpus is a fantastic one. So you've got Reticulatus and Eumundii. They both do so well in pots. And you can give them a root prune, you can give them a haircut. They'll bush up. They're easy to grow.
Yeah.
Shade, sun, water, no water. Fantastic. Nice. Pretty flowers, blueberries. Yeah.
Cute.
Yeah.
That does sound nice, doesn't it?
Mm.
Very good. You are tuned into the 3CR Gardening Show this morning, lovely people, and in the studio with me today is Cass Dowding and Adrian Keane. My name is Chloe Thompson. We've been chatting rental gardeners and pots. Let's move on to talking some plants, shall we?
Yes.
All right. That was said with a lot of glee, Adrian.
Yep.
All right, let's show us what you've got.
Okay, so.
She says on radio, show us what you've got. Tell us about what you've got.
Let's talk through the amazing visual medium of radio.
Yeah, let's do that.
So the first plant I brought in is Stipandra glauca. So it's a little Australian lily. I don't know how closely related it is to Dianella, but it's in that sort of ballpark.
Okay.
It's kind of like a cross between a Dianella and bamboo. So it's got these long stems with leaves that run up it. And then as it matures, it gets little offshoots. I would put it in the beginner to intermediate range as a pot plant. Very easy to grow, but the trick with it is that it doesn't love a hard prune. Like, you know, with something like a Lamandra or a Poa, you can just chop it off at the base and it bounces back.
Oh, yeah.
These do not bounce back. I made that mistake the first few times I grew it. I was like, yeah, now it's looking scabby. I'll just, and then it'll bounce back. No, didn't bounce back. So as they get older, they do get a little bit tatty. So they need just a tiny little bit of a tip prune here and there and a bit of a fuss. But they're really easy to grow. And they're kind of quintessential bush plants because they're, yeah, I grew up with them in Gippsland and see them everywhere.
Oh, yep. Wow. So quintessential understory yes. or grassland, like open grassland?
No, so they're a dry sclerophyll plant. Yep. So think box ironbark forest. Mm. You're probably going to come across these. They're very widespread.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Very
and
cool.
Super easy to grow.
Yeah. I've just done a little Google so I could see the plants.
Yeah.
So Stipandra glauca, Stypandra.
Yep.
Glauca.
Yep.
Yep. Am I saying that correctly?
Yeah. I think that's how you say it. Okay. I mean, it's Latin. Just throw it out there.
Say all the letters, people. Say all the letters.
Give it a crack.
Yeah, really. That is particularly pretty.
Yeah. And they turn into, like, there's quite a bit of foliage you get out of them.
Yes. It looks like they, I mean, this one is obviously in, what, a 14-centimetre pot. But
yeah, it's a new one.
This particular one I'm looking at on Google, it, you know, it's a clumping style plant.
Yeah, definitely. But so you can probably get about half a metre wide and high.
Hmm.
Yep. That's a good little one. And the foliage of the, if you, you know, like you're a native plant enthusiast, mm-hmm. it gives you a good contrast to your shrubs.
Yep.
Because yeah, if it's beautiful. All shrubs in your pot collection, it gets a little monotonous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's got great structure, doesn't it? And it's almost like a bit twisty at the top.
Yeah, it's a very interesting looking plant. Yeah.
It almost looked a little bit like a tiger grass or, as you said, like a young bamboo.
Mm. Yeah. Yes, my neighbour, when I planted it, she was like, is that bamboo? And I was like, no. Don't worry about it because I've got it in a row down the side of my driveway.
Oh, cool.
And if you want to plant it in the ground, it's great for dry shade.
Ooh.
Almost
a challenge.
Almost indestructible.
Oh, that's great to know. Okay, yep. I'm going to take a photo of that one.
Yeah, exactly. And where did you buy that one from?
So this one's from, one's from Kurunga.
Oh.
They're probably one of the few places, I think that's probably the big setback, hard to find.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
So you're going to have to do a little dig around. Kurunga, you know, they're amazing. You can jump on a wait list. They'll get one for you. And they're always super high quality. I think Karawara Native Plants, the Botanic Gardens, up on top of Callista.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty sure I bought them from there as well. Mm. So you'll see them around in specialist native plant nurseries. They do pop up. And then some of the Indige nurseries where they're found in the wild, they'll grow them as well.
Yep.
Because they're just such a tough plant, great for planting out. Yeah.
That's nearly, 50 centimetres tall. Is that about as tall as they get?
It can get a little bit taller.
Okay.
They're formed from southwest WA, used to be called Stipandra grandiflora, I think it was, mm-hmm. and that's a bigger, more robust plant again.
Ah.
So if you ever go to APACE or one of the nurseries over there, I'd be scratching around to try and find one because that would be a cool plant.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'm planting out underneath the ukes between myself and my neighbour at the moment, and I'm now adding that to my list.
Definitely. Get yourself some Stipandra. There's got to be a trick to propagating it. I think it's vegetative propagation, but I'm too nervous to go doing it.
Yeah, well, as a clumping plant, you'd think
I feel like I should just be able to yank it out and chop.
Yeah.
But I'm a bit... Oh, I've got some bigger, more robust plants at home, so I'm going to have a go at giving those a little propagation.
Yeah, even taking a bit off the side.
Well, because what happens is they get little pups on the mature plant stem.
Oh.
And I'm like, surely I can just cut that off and stick it in the ground. I've done it before and it was a fail. So, but I'm not great at propagation.
Could you try that thing where you bend the stem over, peg it down?
I might give that a go.
Yeah.
I'm going to try a few options because it's such a handy plant to have.
Mm.
And you just don't see it around as much as you should.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Adds to list, Kurunga. This is where you almost need to give us a heads up so we can run to Kurunga first.
Yeah, before everyone else goes out.
God, poor Kurunga. The number of times I'm like, you have to just go there and just put a wait list all these plants.
Mm. Yeah.
But, it's a ripper.
Fantastic. Okay, hit us with another one.
Okay, we've got Eucalyptus websteriania.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of a mouthful. Webster's Mallee, southwestern Australian mallee gum. Can get to 5 metres high, but responds well as a pot plant. This would be one of the ukes that I'd recommend trying if you want to have a crack at growing a uke in a pot.
Oh.
Multi-stemmed, lignotuber. Beautiful little heart-shaped silver foliage, and then it's got that mini Ritchie bark. So you know on Gungurus how they've got that really fine bark? Mm-hmm. They've got the same sort of bark. So super ornamental and just another really good one to have a crack at growing in a pot.
Sweet. What are its little flowers like?
I mean, that's probably, they're not...
It's not for its flowers, this
not
one?
For its It's a step back and look.
Yeah. It's a very nice colour.
Yeah, it's a beautiful little plant. But, the flowers, they're just insignificant little white jobbies.
Mm, that's all right.
But, not the end of the world.
No.
It makes up for its with its leaves and its bark.
Yep.
Yep. And yeah, tolerates a little bit of a light prune. I wouldn't be afraid to give it a little bit of a root prune if you're doing it in a pot. Mm-hmm. And then in terms of growing conditions, full sun, maybe part shade, and then just a really high quality native potting mix and away you go.
Yep.
And, you know, it should be able to tolerate a bit of dryness over summer in case you pop away for a weekend and forgot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, this is a lignotuber, it's a mallee, in a small little tube stock. Mm-hmm. If you were potting that up, would you just go one size up or would you go slightly bigger?
At the moment, just being a West Australian native and being aware that they don't love being wet-footed, mm-hmm. I probably would do incremental pot sizes to start off just until we get a bit of rigor in the plant.
Mm-hmm.
And then I might jump up one or two pot sizes.
Sure. Yep. But that's partly because for those who don't know that if you have a small root ball in a big pot and that pot has lots of potting mix, obviously there's not enough roots to suck the moisture out of the potting mix, so you can end up with potting mix that stays really gross and soggy and wet and then detrimentally harms the plant, so we get root rot and things.
For sure. And that's one of the key things, I think, for people living in rentals that come to pot propagation to be mindful of is soil and potting mix, completely different ball game.
Yeah.
Because a potting mix is just organic matter. There's no like inert material really to it.
Mm.
So you've got to be very careful of that as you pot stuff and grow things and think about it. It's like if you go super advanced into orchids like the Caledonias and some of the Dioras, that's when you have to start introducing inert materials because they don't do great in just a potting mix perlite mix.
Okay.
They're bloody hard to grow.
Good tip. There was actually something else I talked about at the talk on Tuesday as well. You know, we talk about sizing up with pots and, you know, sort of people tend to glaze over, oh my God, the money spent on pots, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, the Big Green Shed, your local garden centre, they quite often have a pile or a tub out the front full of black pots, black plastic pots.
Yeah, that are for sure.
For nicks.
Yep.
You know, so never feel that you have to go and buy pots.
Mm.
You can hover around these bins and, you can pick up the next size up. You can pick up a couple of different sizes.
Yep.
Another good plug would be, I know Darabin has the Resource Recovery Centre.
Ah, nice.
So you can swing by there and they often have pots. It's super cheap.
Yeah.
Nice. Yep.
So that's always a good option as well.
Very good tip. Yep. And Facebook Marketplace, you can't go past that either, can you? If you've got your eyes on a particular size pod or trough planter.
Yes, I remember once my mum stupidly bought this massive trough and she didn't realise it was solid reinforced concrete.
Oh, no.
And she got a serious back injury trying to get it.
Oh.
It was terrible.
You needed two people to lift that one.
Yeah, she just went gung-ho and she's like, I've got this, and slipped a disc. No. It was terrible, poor thing.
Disaster.
Yeah. But yeah, Marketplace is great if you want some massive pots, real cheap, because people just want to get rid of them all over the time.
Yeah, for sure. Yep. Let's jump. I see you've still got a few more babies, but let's jump over to Cass's babies that she's brought in.
Yeah.
Because there is one there that was this beautiful blue colour when you brought it in and we were all like, ooh, pretty.
Yes. So this is a Salvia corrugata and it is a beautiful Salvia. It's flowering at the moment in my garden. And I jumped onto the salvias.org.au, which is the Victorian Salvia Study Group, which is a great place to get information about salvias. If you, like me, go to a plant sale and you go, oh, that one's $2 and it's a salvia, I'm just going to take it home and I have no idea what colour it is or how it grows, the Salvia Study Group is a great place to get all that info. So this one, it says online that it is a true blue. And then coming into the studio this morning, everyone's like, it's like purple. But really, really interesting though. Might be a light or a UV thing. But yeah, in the garden, it's actually next to a purple majesty, Salvia, which is a really deep purple. Mm. So it does look really blue maybe because it's next to that purple one. But I love the texture of the leaf.
The leaves on it are gorgeous. Absolutely
it's
stunning.
Really lovely. And it has quite I've got a couple of salvias in the garden and when they flower, they get quite droopy. I'm doing a droopy movement. But this one's quite upright, which is lovely because it's sitting like behind this raised fence at the front. So I'm in love with it. Mm. And it's got quite big flower heads too. And the birds have just been loving, and the bees, getting all the nectar and everything from it. But, we talked about the colour blue in flowers. So to some people, this can look purple, but yeah, it's this. They describe it as an electric blue.
I could see electric blue. Yeah,
it's very pomaderis, as you were saying.
Yes, in the foliage, plant itself it looks a lot like a pomaderis aspera, the hazel pomaderis. Beautiful. I just love plants that have the little fuzzy brown foliage, the hairs.
Yes. Yeah.
So pretty.
And the thing I love, isn't it? It's just such a, so much texture in it. And I love salvias because as a renter and someone who won't stay where they are forever, this one's in the ground at my house, but you can take cuttings and they do cuttings really well.
Yeah, definitely.
So a lot of the things that I've popped in the garden, not in raised beds or pots, I've purposely thought about, I can take cuttings of this for the future.
Yeah.
Such a great idea.
Yeah. So that you don't have that, I've left all my garden behind. It's just such a cool thing to know that one day I can take that away. And
I imagine it would fill out the space quite quickly too. So that would be a nice thing being in a rental is you want a bit of instant gratification. Yeah. You don't want to wait 6 years for like some of the stuff in my garden. It's like, come on, give me one flower.
I never thought of that because there was already that established, I suppose, structure with the box hedges and some azaleas and things and camellias and, all those lovely standards that come in the garden. I added a lot of perennials and colour.
Yeah, beautiful.
And then thought about, because the first few years there was a lot of colour in spring.
Yep.
And then it's got a maple and it's got a few autumn colour changes, but then there was just bleak and green. And so it was, really cool to think about, all right, well, how can I bring some colour into this time of year?
Yep.
And then I started learning more about Australian natives and then what flowered more in winter and added them as well. So, that's a beautiful one that I've discovered this year. And not knowing what colour it would be when it came out, it was just like pure delight.
Yes, because it contrasts so beautifully with the foliage because it's got like a sort of almost an army green, like it's like rich, dark green.
Yeah, but the underside is sort of a silver.
And then it contrasts.
Yeah.
Really pretty. Can you give us the name of that one again,
Cass? Salvia corrugata.
Salvia corrugata.
Yeah.
Very cool. Oh, yeah, nice. And let's just do a quick refresh because someone asked.
Yeah, of course.
Of the two plants that you just talked about.
Yep. So we've got Stipandra glauca.
Mm-hmm, which was the blue flowering lily.
Little native lily. Yep. The common name for this one is a nodding lily.
Nodding
lily. That will come up if you just Google nodding lily.
Okay.
Yep. Which is good. Love a common name where it's the first thing that comes up.
Well, that's it. Yeah. Actually works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes when you type in a common name, you're like,
that is not the plant I was looking for.
And then the other eucalypt was Eucalyptus websteriania, which is called a Webster's mallee.
Ah, yep.
Or a heartleaf mallee, which is cute.
Yeah, that is it's cute. Beautiful.
Yeah.
It could be a romantic little,
a little Valentine's Day gift.
Love until Valentine's Day gift. I mean, we can have flowers, plants at any time of the year, really, can't we?
Yeah.
We've had a question come in about, is it too late to plant sweet peas now, from Kevin in Hawthorne? Adrian's like, oh, I don't know. I would say no, Kevin. I would say absolutely not. Get them in the ground ASAP and give them a shot. I know that there are some florists or flower growers who live, up in the mountains, like Dandenong sort of area, and they'll plant sweet peas almost really early spring.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and just get that one big flush of flowers in early spring or mid to late spring and early summer because it's cold enough up where they are.
Mm.
Definitely give them a shot now, especially you're sowing them as seeds. You're chucking 5 seeds in. Yep. Do a Cass.
Well, thinking of that, I actually wanted to plant sweet peas because I have all these saved seeds and I haven't got mine in yet. Keep thinking about, and that was a good reminder because I think traditionally they say, is it Anzac Day?
Paddy's Day.
There you go. Yeah. But interestingly, if you're looking for more information, I can plug the Diggers have some information online about getting planting over a year and they do have information about how to do twice a year planting depending on the climate.
Yep.
Yeah, and I think that comes from Cloud Hill, which is up in the Dandenong.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice. Good tip. We have a caller. Yes, hello on line 7. Let's get you on. Jill from Brighton. Hello. Yeah.
Hello, Chloe and gang. Yes, really enjoying the show.
Oh, thanks.
Look, I was ringing up. Sorry, I'm getting that feedback here. I've taken myself off speaker, but it's still. Oh, there we are. Is that better?
Yeah, that's fine. Perfect.
Oh, good. Yes, I'm asking about my pomegranate. For the it's a new plant. It only produced one fruit last year.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. But to my delight, it produced about 30 this year, and some of them were absolutely enormous, like bigger than the biggest orange.
Oh, wow.
Others were smaller and so forth. And and I waited, you know, as they say, to wait till they were splitting to pick them off. And then as soon as some of them started splitting, I think either possums or rats got the idea, so yeah. I took the rest off. But even the ones that were thoroughly ripe and splitting, I'm finding that the arils, you know, the little jewels or whatever, have a lot of seed and very little flesh.
Oh.
And I'm just wondering if maybe it's just a dud plant because it's, you know, very healthy, you know, and all of that. And I was thinking, oh, maybe I should just, because the fruit looks so beautiful on it, maybe I won't bother with the fruit anymore. I'll just leave them looking ornamental.
Yeah.
Because, the fruit was a real disappointment. As I said, a lot of seed and very little sort of flesh around it. I suffer from gastric reflux, and I just found, you know, if I have many of them to eat, I get a terrible tummy ache.
Oh, no.
Far too much sort of sharp fibre there.
Yep.
I guess, you know, the only other thing is to perhaps squash them and make some juice from them.
Mm.
But then if you've ever tried removing the seeds, I do it underwater now because...
Yes, otherwise you get everything stained and it looks like a murder scene, doesn't it?
Yes. My husband did one and we had the murder scene up about 3 metres on the wall.
Oh, no!
Jesus!
And he said, oh, I'm never going to do that again. And I said, no, you won't. I looked it up on YouTube and they said, you know, do it underwater and then all the juice squirting off everywhere, you know, stays there and you can just lift the arils out of the water. And also the water's useful because, you know, the little sort of pithy bits, the white pith, it floats to the surface. You can scoop that off with a strainer and then just pick the fruit out and so on. But, yes, any ideas on the fact of the big seed, little fruit? Do you think there's any hope for the future or just...
I'd say if it's still producing well, I give it at least another season to see how it goes. I would perhaps suggest trying to try a couple of fruit before they really start splitting in the hope that the arils inside are not quite as dry. So they're, you know, they're a bit more plump and a bit more fresh. Perhaps try picking it before they start splitting.
I did once some sides are split, as I said, the... an animal started attacking some of the others, so I picked them all off. And so I've tried a range of them, including those that hadn't yet split.
Mm.
But, yeah, just very disappointing. They look beautiful and decorative, but they're pretty hard going on the gut.
Yeah, that is interesting. I think that's probably my only suggestion.
Sometimes with fruit and... it could be a watering thing.
That was going to be my other comment.
Brighton, are you on sort of sandy grey sands?
We are, but I've got an automatic system, and it's got the pomegranate has its own special little sprinkler.
Yeah.
Mm.
And I during the dry weather, I give it 10 minutes twice a week.
It might just be because this can happen because I've got sandy loams as well, and it just happens for me every year. The soil just automatically becomes hydrophobic, so it might be worth just testing a little sample site and see to make sure that the water's penetrating through properly and not just pooling.
Hmm.
Maybe, although honestly, two things. One is yes, I'm on the sand belt, but this is a new garden bed, so I put a lot of compost in.
Yep.
And secondly, the fact that the fruit was so large and abundant didn't suggest to me as if the plant was thirsty, you know, and the leaves never ever wilted or anything. It all looked like just extremely happy and healthy, and it's grown really well. And as I said, you know, I was so thrilled when it produced so much fruit. But yes,
the fruit was not great quality, apart from the fact that it looked beautiful. And
My other tip there, given particularly your potentially free draining soil, is the fertilising that you're doing for it. I've just had a quick look and found online that the best time to fertilise your pomegranate is the last week of winter, ready for spring.
Yeah, so it's sort of starting to move underground, but not visible on the top sort of thing. Okay, I'll do that with just kind of blood and bone sort of thing.
Yeah, you want something that's pretty rich in nitrogen, so something like blood and bone would be good, but you also need that potassium, so that K. So if you wanted to, you could use a blood and bone that had some potassium, or blood and bone with a handful of sulfate of potash. It's also suggesting you'll need to fertilise again in autumn. So, I mean, even if you did a fertilising now and then again in very late winter. So maybe try that double fertilising and see if that works out as well.
Yes, because that would, okay, I'll try that, yes, and I just sort of want to whisper to it, just, you know, make smaller seeds, please, with more flesh on them.
Yeah, I know. No, we'll give that a shot, and hopefully
I'll try that, the fertilising, I think, that's so.
Yeah, because then maybe it's got a bit more oomph. It's got the energy it needs to put into those fleshy arils for you, so hopefully that helps.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I really appreciate it.
No worries, Jill. Thanks.
Okay, all the best to you.
Bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye. Aha, love a good conundrum.
Mm.
Or as my dad would say, just lean the axe against it and give it a bit of a threat. you know, this apricot tree or this tree or that tree is not doing what it wants. And Dad used to swear by leaning the axe against it for a little bit.
A bit of motivation.
Yeah, I know. Give it a bit of a kick up the backside. Rosie from Mount Eliza says, I have some sunflower seeds from a friend and I would love to plant them. Do I have to wait now until the spring, or is this one I could risk now, do you think? I would say you would be waiting until the spring, Rosie.
Yeah.
The frost, unfortunately, will nip at their little leaves.
Apparently they can last down to -1.
Really?
Attila told me. So Attila is a friend who's been a guest on my show, and he lives up in New South Wales near Yass.
Mm-hmm.
So he's quite an expert on all things frosts and what plants can
survive.
They get
some doozies up
there. Yeah. So I learned so much about frost from Attila. But the thing is, they need that warmth to kickstart now. Mine, when I planted them, we had a lot of warm weather.
Yep.
But I wouldn't be starting them now.
No.
Yeah, they're not going to. Well, you can try, but you're going to be sad.
Yeah.
Hold on to them till spring.
No, that sounds like a good tip. Mm. And then you'll have an incredible display.
It'll be amazing.
Yeah. Absolutely. Sorry, I was just watching Doug, the producer, wave his hands and I thought he was trying to get my attention. No, it looks like him and I are having a lovely chat about plants. I love that. I love that. I have an event that I'm actually going to plug, if that's okay with everybody. And I know there may be or maybe not some people from WA listening, but I'm attending as a speaker the Kalamunda Garden Festival just outside Perth.
Awesome.
I was about to say the 5th, but I have a sneaking suspicion it's actually the 6th of June. Let me get the date correct. No, it's the 7th of June.
Okay.
Sunday the 7th of June at Kalamunda. So there's a Kalamunda Garden Festival that happens there. Short drive out of Perth up in the hills. And
lovely.
I've never been to that area before, but yeah.
Wow.
It's apparently a really well attended and really loved event. Myself, Tammy Huynh, Connie Cow and Craig Castry are the speakers.
Cool. Awesome. Great panel.
Yeah, shaping up to be a good event.
Yeah, that'll be fantastic.
If you're from WA or the Perth region, I'd love to see you and say hi and you know, come out and enjoy a fun gardening day. Maybe if you could turn on some temperature that's slightly higher than 11 or 12 degrees, that'd be nice. I haven't had any events. Obviously, maybe it's the time of the year, but if anyone does have any gardening events that they'd like us to read out on air, feel free to shoot us a text message. Or, of course, if you have a gardening question that you would like to shoot us a text message, you can message in on 0488 809 855, and you're currently tuned in to the 3CR Gardening Show with me, Chloe Thompson, Cass Dowding and Adrian Keane. Let's go back to looking at your plants again.
More
Adrian.
Plants?
Yes, please. What
Very
else
good.
Have you brought in?
We'll go with the Coria.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to mangle the scientific name. It's short, but it's weirdly spelled.
Oh.
I think it's Eubernia or Eubernia.
How do we spell it?
Let me double check that one.
Okay.
Because it is odd spelling. Eubernia. Eubernia?
Eubernia.
Yeah. Haven't seen that in... That was a Latin name before.
No, the E just looks a bit superfluous, doesn't it?
It doesn't. Like, is that E silent? Oh, yeah. God.
No, let's go with the theory. You say every letter.
Yeah.
Eubernia.
Gorgeous. Another really rare plant. It's only found in the little riparian corridors of the southern lofty ranges in South Australia.
Whoa. So
very restricted range, very at risk in the wild.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of – South Australia is really interesting. They have a lot of species of corias, mm-hmm. which when you come across to Victoria and New South Wales, we still have different species of corias, but you'll often get a lot of variants within the one species.
Yep.
Whereas over in South Australia, they have a lot of distinct species, which is quite different in contrast.
Okay.
This guy gets to about 1.5 metres high by 1.5 metres wide. It's proven to be reliable and tough in my garden. It hasn't, the most interesting thing about it is it has two little leaves that clasp around the side of the flower and they partially obscure it, which is like the easiest way to distinguish it from other corias.
Right.
Yeah. So I found it super easy to grow from cutting as well, like, cause I'm not great at, at cuttings. Threw these in and I was like, let's have a crack.
Yeah.
You know, it's a very rare in cultivation. I've only found it once or twice and all three of them struck. So I was super
Good
chuffed
job.
With that.
Nice.
Does excellent as a pot plant, like all corias, and it's one of those things that I would recommend to any beginner just to have a crack at.
Yeah.
You can do. And with corias, you've got such a diversity. You've got stuff that works in full shade, stuff that works in harsh sun. You can not water them. You can water them. Mm-hmm. You can chop off some of the roots if you need to. Give them a hard haircut. They love it.
Yeah.
Can't go wrong with a coria.
Yeah, so good, aren't they? And, you know, every area sort of has ones that grow super well in them, I found.
Yeah,
you know,
definitely.
Your local nursery will have the ones that grow super well in your area.
Yeah.
And being so easy to propagate, have you found all other corias are just as easy?
Yeah, all of them have not been a tricky thing to grow from cuttings.
Yep.
There's one last coria, which is my holy grail. It's Coria amula, or the hairy coria.
Yeah.
I'm on a wait list with Neil Marriott. He's growing me some.
Okay.
So he's one of the native plant gurus that lives out in the Grampians.
Yeah.
I reached out and he was like, mate, love to. I'll grow you some.
Oh, nice.
So, and they've been on my wait list for 15 years.
Oh, my goodness.
I've never seen them in cultivation. And then I found one plant at the Botanic Gardens in Melbourne growing next to the herbarium.
Yep.
It's the only one I've ever seen.
Whoa.
Apparently they're like some of the Coria reflexa varieties and Coria amula, they're quite hard to grow. They're very water sensitive.
Mm.
So
okay.
If they dry out, they're just drop dead.
Fuss pots.
Yep. Yeah, there's a Coria cultivar called Coria Fat Bastard.
That one.
That's not reliable on its own rootstock.
Okay.
Yeah, needs to be grafted.
Yeah.
Yep.
Interesting.
Yeah. So that's a great little one. If you track one down, give it a go. It's incredibly rare, but very rewarding and easy to grow.
So that's Coria eubernia.
Eubernia. Yeah, and the common name's Deep Creek Coria.
Deep Creek Coria. That was going to be my next question.
Yep.
Deep Creek Coria. And what area did you say it was from?
So it's from the southern lofty ranges in South Australia.
Yep.
And it grows along creeks.
Ah, okay, yep. Hence its name. Don't you love how we're, like, so predictable with our names in Australia?
Yeah. I just occasionally on my Instagram, I'll just make up the common name.
Because
it'll just be so obvious. It'll be like, I don't know. Oh, I can't think of one now. But you'll see the Latin name for it and it'll be like Macrophylla or something.
Yeah.
And then it won't have a common name and you'd be like, oh, yeah, it's, you know, genus large-leaved or large-leaved genus name. Mm. Just make it up.
I'm going to go back through your Instagram now. And I'm like,
oh, yeah. You'll Google some of the common names. It's like, he's just making
that
up.
Yeah. That's so funny.
Yes, he is. I like that you've decided it needs a common name. It needs an interesting common name. So
I will
create one.
If you dive in with the Latin name for a lot of stuff, it kind of disengages a lot of people straight away because they're like, I'm not going to remember that.
Yeah. Well, I even find the spelling is hard because I'm one of those people. Ironic that I'm a magazine editor, but I'm one of those people that if someone spells something to me, especially if they spell it really quickly, I'm like, whoa, you've lost me.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay, slow down, slow down. Spell it slowly. Yeah. You know, I need it spelt out slowly, and then I need to observe the spelt out word slowly. Mm. So, yeah, I do struggle if people are like, oh, yeah, its botanical name is blah, blah, blah.
Oh, yeah.
And it's spelled blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh.
The problem I have is that I'll remember the botanical name, but then I'll just add a little bit of extra spice to it and throw in a few extra vowels, a couple of extra letters, and it's gone from being like macrophylla to macrophilius or something fancier.
Yep.
Just with an extra twist. And then I'll look at the spelling of it again later and I'm like, that is so wrong. And then the silent P, that always gets me.
Yep.
Like Pteris stylus, and you look at it and it's like, oh yeah, Pteris stylus, and it's like, that is not.
Yep.
It's the note.
It's like say every letter except the P.
Yeah, never say a P. And then there'll be a time when you have to say the P, yeah. Like Pulcella, and you're like, oh, shit.
I remember when I first came across a Thai lotus.
Yes.
I was listening and taking notes to like a talk.
Yeah.
And so I wrote it down as Thai, T-H-A-I, lotus. Yeah. And then I wrote it into something I was writing about in the test gardens. And then I went to look up the plant and I couldn't find the Thai lotus.
Yeah.
But it starts with a P. And so it's like, what are those things? I'm like, oh,
that's
a
good example because there's no Y in there either.
No.
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 It's a real short little one. Yeah. It's like, oh, hang on.
And then I looked and I'm like, oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. But now I know. But yeah, it gets you. I'm the same. I can't remember. It takes a lot of mental energy to remember the botanical names.
Yeah. And the spelling.
The spelling. And then and then I've got to like spell it out phonetically and it doesn't always make sense. But if someone says it, I'll tend to remember it. Maybe it's like that musical thing.
Yeah.
And if you make it, though, maybe that's what you're doing, making it quite musical.
Yeah, a little too musical.
Oh, dear.
That's fun. That's fun. We had a question from David and Katie in Upway. Have you got any advice on creating a frog bog?
Ooh.
Ooh, has anyone made a frog bog in their garden?
Not on purpose.
No.
No, I don't have.
I've always lived in the inner city, so frogs are sparse on the ground.
Yeah.
Right.
They're pretty straightforward. Like if you live nearby where frogs are, give them like some still water, plenty of water plants emergent and submerged, and lots of cover around it, nice log coming out of it. Yeah. I mean, you can even do it with a wine barrel.
Yeah.
Mm.
Very doable.
Yeah.
Yep. Just about making sure there's enough cover for the frogs.
Yeah.
And there's frogs nearby. Don't go stealing tadpoles or frogs or things from the wild.
Yeah.
But yeah. They're not super hard. There's not a lot to it.
Mm.
Or if you want to dig a shallow hole, put a pond liner down, get your emergence and submerged plants in there, go from there. Very easy.
And you know what? Frogs can be really hard to spot because obviously they're quite shy and some of them can be really, really tiny. Mum actually sent me this picture of a frog the other day from their garden. I'll show you in a second. But often frogs are really, really hard to spot. And if you can't see them, you can quite often hear them.
Yeah. Mm.
And often their calls are enough to be able to help you work out what it is.
Yeah, definitely.
So, you know, if you hear this repeated noise, particularly in the evening or, you know, overnight, you can jump on websites and look up frog calls and match the call to the critter that you're hearing.
Wow.
So, look, again, great radio, everyone. We'll put it up on the socials.
Posts, yeah.
This is this gorgeous little frog.
Oh, it's a parent's tree frog.
Isn't
stunning.
It gorgeous.
That's so cute.
You know, a fun fact about those, I think they're the only frog in Australia that has a cross-eyed pupil.
Yeah, and you know what? That is exactly what. So I didn't know what it was. I'm not a froggy person. So I sent it to Em Bowman, thinking she'll know what it is.
Yeah, Em would have been like, oh, my God, it's a parent's tree frog.
Yeah, she did.
Yeah.
She's like,
love him.
She's like, oh, it's a parent's tree frog. It's a lot darker than you'd normally see, but that's, you know, completely normal. But that cross in their eye is a definitive thing
that's
of a parent's tree frog.
They have a very distinctive call. They're called manic cackling frogs.
Yeah.
Is a common name.
Can you give us an example?
No. I think impersonating Em with a very high-pitched Muppet's voice was enough.
I was going to say to David and Katie, because they're in Upway and it's not far from the George Tyndale Gardens up in up near Inalinda, and because my kids used to do bush kinder up there, and they have a beautiful pond that's near the house up there, and it's always full of frogs. So if you want to have a look at yeah, what they're doing up there. Go and have a look at how they've set it up and then what plants maybe are in it, because that's local to you. Mm-hmm. And then that would be a good way in case you can't find much information. Yeah.
I just thought Upway, you've got two really good local Indigenous plant nurseries around
yes.
you.
Yes, you do.
So yeah. Dandenong, Southern Dandenong's nursery, mm-hmm. they do phenomenal rainforest stuff
yep.
and little wet sclerophyll bits and pieces. Lots of yeah. really interesting rare things. And then go to CARES, Knox Environmental
yep. Yep.
Centre
yeah,
yeah. Services.
I've been there in years.
CARES is awesome. And they've got, they're on a creek and they've got a big wetland yep. area. The staff are super knowledgeable and really helpful, and they've stocked a full range of locally Indigenous wetland plants. Yep. And just on wetland plants, just be a little bit careful because they some of them can be weedy.
Yeah.
So maybe avoid the big green shed for your wetland,
yeah,
for
yeah.
your frog bog plants.
Yeah, good tip. Go local.
Yeah.
Go local and go with what's known. Yeah. So there we go. There's that cute little frog. Have a listen out. And, yeah, I did actually find the sound on just by Googling Perron tree frog, Perron, P-E-R-O-N, and sent that link to Mum. And I said, well, this is what he sounds like. Is yeah. it right? And she listened. She's like, yeah.
Yeah.
That's exactly what he sounds like. Yeah. So, yeah, again, so you can almost reverse Google yeah. the frog. Mm.
We've got some real distinctive ones. Another great one is the banjo frog.
Yeah.
They sound amazing.
Yeah.
Like a big group of those is so beautiful to listen to.
Yep.
I grew up next to a wetland.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Oh, nice.
Lots of frogs. All the frogs.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
Yeah. My parents don't really know the specific names of them, but they'll nickname them based on their calls.
Mm.
So there's one that's in a pond nearby and it clicks. So Mum calls it Clicking Clive.
Oh, does it sound like little, like, sticks hitting each other?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's one of the marsh frogs. I'm not sure if it's the spotted or the striped.
Ah.
Yeah.
There yeah. you go, yeah. And so she'll be like, oh, it's Clicking Clive season. Can you hear him go? to the people in Upway wanting to make a bog frog, go to the nursery at Birdsland. They'll be able to help.
That's the one Adrian's talking about.
Is that the one?
Is that the one at Dandenong South? I'm pretty sure.
Oh, not at Dandenong South. Oh, what's
Sorry,
it called?
Sorry, no, Southern Dandenong.
Southern Dandenong. I'm pretty sure that's the one at Birdsland.
I always get confused when I Google it, but every time I go there, they have the most amazing
Birdsland Reserve.
Yeah.
Is that the one they're talking
about? Yeah, Southern Dandenong's there. You'll have to check out their opening times, but yeah, you drive to Birdsland and then you drive through the car park and go up this hill and then it's up on the ridge, up on the left.
Yeah. Uh-huh. There you go.
Get yourself a Grevillea or Alpina from there as well.
All right, another text message coming in. Lovely show, thank you. I am planting a new community centre in Coburg with natives.
Ooh.
It's a large concrete area with some small in-ground beds. Okay, there's a triangle bed adjacent to the street footpath, short sides, 5 metres by, I think that says 3. That's bizarre. The pixels in my screen don't... Oh, 5 by 3, mm-hmm. where I want to put some small trees. Any recommendations for fast-growing trees with roots that won't damage the concrete? Thanks heaps. Oh, thanks for your kind words, by the way.
Yeah.
So 3 by 5, triangle bed. And so the garden bed is sitting directly on the concrete. Has it got a base on it or is it an open?
Oh, it says adjacent.
Oh, it does too, adjacent yeah. to the street footpath. Silly me, sorry.
That's okay.
Small in-ground beds that I don't want to damage the concrete footpath. Oh, that's tight.
Yeah.
Yep.
Small trees. We could go shrubs as well.
I'd be expanding that range into a large shrub.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you want something rapid growing, plant a Myoporum floribundum.
Oh, yeah.
You'll get a full-size tree in 2 years.
Yeah.
And then it'll die in 3. So Myoporum floribundum, if you want instant impact,
yep.
that will be a good option.
Okay.
Will
any of the mallees, will their roots harm the footpath?
It's sort of a time frame thing.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it could be okay.
Mm.
Just be really mindful of sort of when you read the label at a nursery, just mm-hmm. be very mindful of there's a huge difference between a 4 metre and a 6 metre tree.
Yeah, true.
Like it doesn't seem like a lot, but the reality of it is a mm-hmm. lot. Like the Webster's mallee that I've mentioned, that could work.
Okay.
Yeah. And also being a mallee, you can cut it back to the mallee root once it gets established.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that could be a good option.
What are those? Are they baby blue or blue baby?
Eucalyptus pulverulenta.
Ooh, that one. I love those.
That could work. I noticed that their structure is very poor, and yeah. being next to a footpath, they often flop in one direction.
Good point, actually.
They would work well coppiced.
Yeah.
That's a really good option.
Mm-hmm.
Small ukes. There is a... just having a little ponder. I'm on the spot.
It's not a uke, but it's got very sort of glaucousy, greeny foliage. Mm-hmm. And it's one that grows so well at my place. Is the Digger Speedwell.
Oh, as and a ground cover.
Yeah, yeah, as a ground cover. And don't you reckon it's almost ukey kind of
foliage? They look
foliage?
Like a uke.
They do, don't they?
Great. And they can tolerate a hard prune too.
Yeah, tolerates a hard
really
prune.
Good option.
Grows as a nice understory.
Eucalyptus gregsoniania.
Okay.
That's what I'd plant.
Oh.
Wolgan mallee. Wolgan snow gum.
Gregsoniana.
Iania. Iania? Iana?
That's one of those ones where I've written too many I's and too many A's.
S-O-N-I-A-N-A?
Yeah, there you go. Yep.
Can you spell
okay,
it out for
so,
us?
Okay, so eucalyptus. So G-R-E-G-S-O-N-I-A-N-A.
Oh, I nearly got it.
Quite a well-behaved one.
Okay.
Gets a nice little bit of height to it, nice fine foliage, your classic snow gum bark. Ooh. I've found that they're a lot more reliable in Melbourne than some of the other snow gums.
Okay.
So when a lot of your eucalyptus pulsifloras, they're quite dry sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, this particular one doesn't seem as dry sensitive.
Hmm.
So we've started using them as street trees. You see them all through Banyul City Council as street trees.
Okay.
They're tough.
Ah.
Great choice. I see them a lot in social housing. So whoever's doing the landscape plans for new social housing loves them. And that's a good indicator if they're doing well there because they get no attention.
Yep.
Okay. So that would be a good option. And it's not going to be a thumper.
Okay. What was its common name as well?
Wolgan snowgum. W-O-L-G-A-N.
Wolgan snowgum. Fantastic. Well, I hope that helps and have fun with your new planting. That sounds like a really interesting place to be able to plant out. New community garden centre in Coburg. What fun. Yeah. Well, hopefully it becomes a place for garden knowledge sharing and learning. Maybe you'll have a local garden club there.
There's a desperate need for more garden clubs in the northern suburbs.
Oh, there
We've got
you
a
go.
Shortage. Yeah.
Yeah, because that's your neck of the woods.
Yeah, that's my neck of woods. I know Preston has an established garden club.
Okay.
But I'm thinking like an APS. I don't think we've got an APS out that way.
Did you see that they're starting a city group?
Yes, in Carlton.
Okay, so that's different. But yeah.
Same vibe.
Same vibe.
Yeah. I'll swing down. I'll come down from zone two and they'll be like, oh, what are you doing here? You're not zone one. Go away.
So I'm from the southeast suburbs. So anything like around the cities, that's all city. But
yeah.
Oh, that's so good.
That's classic.
I realised I just didn't get round to yet talking about these quick gardening books. So I'm just going to read you out a couple of gardening books that I've loved from my stash that have been sent to me lately. So there's one here called The Mushroomery by Buttons Mirror. That is her name.
What a great name.
Isn't it cool? Especially if she's a mushroom.
She's a mushroom person. Yeah.
Like, so cool. But it's a really definitive guide on how to grow, harvest and cook incredible mushrooms. Mm. This is not yet released.
Okay.
But if you're someone who's wanted to have a go at mushrooms and always wanted sort of all the information in one place, there is so much information here, right from literally starting with nothing. So, yeah, really cool book. I reckon she'd actually be a really fun guest to get on because she grows in Fairfield, so she's not...
Oh, really?
Yeah. She's got a mushroom farm in Fairfield, so...
How cool.
I know. I'm like, oh, hello, need to reach out to you.
I'm always tempted by those shiitake mushroom logs. That looks like a great time.
Yes. Well, there's details on how to grow them in there. They sound like the one that you need a lot of patience for.
Oh. Okay.
Another plug is this incredible little pocket guide that I picked up.
Oh.
It's called Insects of Melbourne, so obviously relevant to people who are in and around Melbourne, but it's about... slightly shorter than A4, and it's only the width of your hand, so it's designed to be carried in your pocket. And it's a concertinaed, thick, laminated, you know, plastic-coated paper.
Mm.
And there's over 100 different butterflies, bees, ants, wasps, beetles, what else is there? Flies, damselflies, cockroaches, grasshoppers and bugs and cicadas of this area. So it's meant as a pocket ID guide,
yep.
You know, handy one to keep in your glove box or chuck in your backpack if you're ever, you know, out walking around parklands. And that one, it was produced by the City of Melbourne, but from memory, the easiest place to pick a copy up is actually from heartscapes.org.au. They're the people who created the Melbourne Pollinator Corridor.
Yep.
And so, yeah, really, really handy little pocket guide. Beats carrying around a book or trying to Google something while you're
They may have some at Fed Square.
They actually do,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, okay.
So they were saying that some of the City of Melbourne tourists info hotspots have those, which I think is a really worthwhile guide. And for something a little different, and I think this is a new release as well, it's actually a novel called The Secret Garden Club. Out of Heartbreak, Green Shoots Grow by Wendy Lynn Newton. I've not read this yet, but again, this is a brand new release. And essentially, it's, you know, a novel that has a really strong gardening theme. So, you know, I think as gardeners, we quite often like that side of things. And I think there probably should be more books.
Yeah, I think Wendy's an Aussie too.
She is. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep, that's cool.
So, yeah, really beautiful book with covered in plants. And
great cover.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? So I look forward to reading that one. Nice leisurely read, but still, you know.
Interesting.
Perfect.
Little float to gardening in it as well. Which I think is really cool. We have a couple of minutes left. Do you want to cover off your last plant?
Should we go lucky last?
Yeah. Lucky last. Let's go.
Okay. So if you are a more advanced gardener, I would be thinking about having a crack at growing some Australian alpine plants. So the one I've got in front of me is a Kalmesia or a snow daisy. I've had mixed results with them, dependent on species. So at the moment, I've got Kalmesia pugiformis, which is a little tiny dagger-leafed one. That's doing really, really well. It's suckered. It looks like I might get some flowers, fingers crossed. And then I grew another one from Tasmania, and that was an instant disaster. But this one that I've got in front of me is quite a bigger plant. It's Kalmesia. Oh, it's pugiformis. So what's the other one at home? Never mind. This guy's about 10 centimetres tall at the moment. Apparently it can get to 20 centimetres tall, which is an exciting proposition.
Cool foliage.
Yeah, great foliage. It's genuine silvery fluffy foliage, which is very pleasing on the eye. In a pot, it will need sharp drainage. It needs a little bit of organic matter in there. It cannot tolerate getting completely dry. So if you go on a summer holiday, you'll need a good horticultural friend to keep an eye on it. Drop it off at their house. Don't leave it alone. But yeah, very rewarding. And I mean, all Australian alpine plants are in a lot of trouble in the wild, whether that be from horse grazing, deer grazing, bushfires, climate change. So getting that knowledge of how to grow them in cultivation is critically important.
Yeah.
And you can contribute to an ex situ conservation population. So yeah, get some feel good feelings from growing some rare plants.
And what are, you said daisy, what are its flowers like?
Just a classic daisy, but they're quite big.
Okay.
Yeah, it's one. This particular one that I've got in front of me is the most common one you'll see when you go on alpine walks.
Yep.
So you'll see them in big mass drifts, and it'll just be a massive silvery foliage, and then big white daisies pocketed through it.
Oh, have fun!
Yeah, great plant.
Oh, that is fantastic.
Hmm.
Nice. And you've got that happily growing in what, a 10 centimetre sort of pot?
It's in a 10 at the moment. I'm going to do similar to what Fermi said. I'm going to planted up with a couple of other alpines that I bought recently.
Okay.
And another little trick that Alan mentioned is putting some larger rocks in there, and it creates little pockets of moisture, which alpines love. It also creates thermal mass, so there's a nice big cold rock. It helps keeps the soil cool too.
Yep.
So it's just a little trick to have up your sleeve to get your alpines doing extra well.
That is a neat little trick. And actually having them clustered, you creating that mini-scape, mini-landscape vibe to it as well.
Yeah, so that's a ripper. I'm excited to plot that in with, I've got a little ranunculus, a little thing called a sky lily, a couple of others. It's going
to
be great.
Okay, now you're going to have to tell us the name again.
Yep, Kalmesia, C-E-L-M-I-S-I-A.
Okay, Kalmesia. And does it have a common name?
Snow daisy.
Snow daisy.
But again, if you type in straight snow daisy, you are going to get 10 different things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, don't do that. Kalmesia. It's almost, do you remember those troll dolls, Cass, from when we were growing up?
Yeah. It's a grey-haired snow.
Yeah, there's a little hair tie in there. Yep. It does.
But I can see how they would look incredible en masse.
Oh, yeah.
And
Do the daisies come out of the top or are they? That top. Okay.
Yeah.
And so en masse, that's where you get that big effect.
It's quite spectacular when it's in flower.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm, fun.
Mm. So excited to give this one a little go.
Yeah, I think I need to go down the alpine plant.
If you've got somewhere that's part shade.
Yeah.
That's the thing that really confused me at the start was, oh, yeah, it's an alpine, it needs full sun.
Okay.
Fatal error.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Wiped out a bunch of stuff.
And is that just because, you know, they don't have as many sunny days up there or just because it's cooler?
I think it's the intensity of the heat is what knocks them off.
Okay.
So it's kind of, I'm finding from just my experience of growing them, it's a trade-off. So if I grow them in the shade, they're a little bit leggier and they don't flower as often.
Okay.
It's just not possible to grow them in full sun in Melbourne.
Or morning sun only? Not
morning sun is a great idea. Yeah. Easterly is.
Yep.
East aspect in general opens the door for so many cool plants because you get that sun, but then you're not getting blasted in the afternoon by the westerly sun.
Yeah.
Mm.
All right, I'm sold. I have an easterly aspect. I have a trough plant that has nothing in it. I'm going to.
And just if you want to get Australian native alpines, Mount Hotham has its own nursery.
Okay.
And the lady that runs it is a wealth of knowledge and she's more than happy to mail you plants.
Oh, how cool.
That's cool.
Mm. So, like Mount Hotham website, socials?
Yeah. If you just type in, what did I type in? Australian Alpine Nursery.
Oh, okay.
And then it comes up through the resort. So it's run by the resort.
Oh, how cool.
So they do all their own re-veg propagation works.
Oh, wow.
Because, you know, they're inside a national park, so they're very particular about growing from local provenance and just the most amazing plants that they grow there. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. One of the ones that I really love that I got from there is called Hovia Montana, which is a little Australian native pea flower. Masses of purple flowers.
Oh, nice. It's
gorgeous.
Oh, what fun.
And that's doing well in the ground. That was a real surprise for me.
Oh.
So, yeah.
Huh. I like your tip about the rocks around the roots. I think I've heard the Eucalyptus Silver Princess loves having rocks around its roots as well.
Oh, really? Yeah. I just gave one of them to my father-in-law as a present. Okay.
Yeah.
We haven't potted it up yet.
Mm. They're not the most strong. They don't have the most strong root system on them, a lot of them, because they're used to just wedging. Because when you see them in the wild, you're like, how the hell is this alive?
Yeah. Okay.
They're growing limbs.
All right.
It's just like, you know, when you go to Wilson's Prom and there's just boulders everywhere.
Yeah.
Well, imagine one of those just wedged in there and that's what it lives in.
All right.
There was another weird sound effect that just happened. Oh, my goodness.
You hear a buzzing sound.
I know. I heard a buzzing sound.
I think it was outside the studio.
I was outside the studio. Okay.
It's all good.
I was like, what? So I've had multiple people have struggled to grow Silver Princess.
Oh, okay.
And then multiple landscapers, and I think maybe it was even you, Adrian, who said, rocks around the root zone.
Big as you can get, chuck a couple of rocks around it, and they'll be right as rain.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Nifty tip. I wonder if that helps with a bit of stabilisation as well.
I reckon it would.
Yeah, probably would.
They're a funny one.
They can, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Mum and Dad had one and I think it literally ended up falling over.
Mm. Okay.
Because it didn't have any rocks around it, but also just it got so top heavy.
Mm. The Silver Princess has a very difficult form to manage.
Mm. Which is a shame because they're so pretty.
I thought this is going to be great. But
there's another type of eucalyptus. We were talking about it during Eucalypt Day. There's another. So there's different subspecies. There's quite a few. There's a finer leafed form that has a better overall form and structure.
Okay.
It's a little easier to grow. One of the nurseries around where I live has started growing them. I don't know which one because they started popping up in everyone's gardens. They're onto it. But yes, a healthy Silver Princess is just chef's kiss. It's like a little gardening jewel.
Yeah, yep. Very, very true indeed. My goodness, we are rounding out the show, folks. It always flies by when you are having so much fun. So I just wanted to quickly give a big thanks to our producers, Di and Doug. Thanks to Daniel Jackson and Liam Killick for doing our socials. Thanks also to our wonderful guests, Cass Dowding and Adrian Keane. And thank you to you for our wonderful listeners for tuning in. If you are listening to this as the podcast, we'd love it if you could leave us a rating and review on whatever platform you are listening from. It has been an absolute pleasure talking gardening with you, nerding out on plants and really just deep diving. My name's Chloe and it has been fantastic talking talking to you all. So a big bye for now. Thanks, everyone.
CR podcast. If you found it valuable, please consider donating or subscribing to support independent community radio. To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au.